podcast.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Dina, I have to ask you, what is this?
This is Ghost Radio.
Ghost Radio. What's Ghost Radio?
Ghost Radio is an audio collage sound art piece by an artist, Ven Voisey.
Okay, I suppose I should tell people who you are.
Good idea.
You are Dina Deitch. You're the curator of contemporary art at the Decorativa Sculpture Park and Museum in Lincoln. And there's someone sitting next to you. I've got to ask you a question. Abigail,
sure.
Ghost Radio, I mean, it even sort of has a bit of a paranormal, like that, paranormal sound.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Ven has collected ghost stories and paranormal activity to create this site-specific sound piece at the Decorativa for the biennial.
Well, you'll listen to a little bit more of it.
The idea that radio waves travel through the air and are picked up via antenna, that we sometimes know somebody's going to call us before they do. Perhaps.
Wow. Okay, so I should introduce you too, I guess. You're Abigail Ross Goodman, guest curator for the biennial at the Decorativa and former owner of the Judy Rotenberg Gallery on Newberry Street. Did I actually hear someone's actual story as part of this collage just now?
You did. Ven actually went out and solicited through an email blast different people's, you know, experiences of ghost stories and recordings of paranormal things that they've heard in their own homes and spaces. He actually created a Google number, 2134-GHOST-5, which I believe is actually still running if you would like to continue submitting stories to create this piece.
Oh, so people can actually call in, submit their stories of paranormal experiences or seances or whatnot, and he'll continuously add it into this sound collage?
Yep, that's true.
Okay, so Dina, as a radio person, this sound art just sounds amazing to my ear. I love this. I mean, radio itself is such an ethereal medium. How does it work in an actual museum setting?
Actually, perfectly. It's a sound piece that's really designed for the architecture of the Decorativa, which is sort of a sprawling building. And so what Ven did is he set these little transmitters, about 6 or 7 of them, throughout the building, and then at the entrance of the building, you rent out a little handheld radio, and you basically go on a hunt, a ghost hunt yourself. And you walk through, as you walk through the galleries, and you have the radio set to 107.7, actually, and it will pick up, when you're near one of the transmitters, it will actually pick up one of the stories, and you'll hear the sound piece very much like you hear on the radio.
Sebastian, you've got to love this.
It's pretty amazing, yeah. And you know, Dina's absolutely right. The Decorativa is a fantastic museum just spatially. So to have these strange sounds accompanying your walk through this really mixed up space with little nooks and crannies and then bigger galleries is definitely kind of interesting.
So for regular listeners of Radio Boston, they'll recognize your voice, Sebastian Smee, Pulitzer Prize-winning art critic for the Boston Globe. Let's just listen to a tiny bit more of this. It's so transporting.
I used to have someone come sit on my chest. This was like a 10-year period, you know, about once a month. And
wow. So that is Ven Voisey, but he's only one of 23 artists, right, that are being featured in this year's biennial at the Decorativa. Tell us a little bit more about how you went about, both of you, Dina and Abigail, crisscrossing New England to find 23 artists to feature, in the biennial.
Sure. The Decorativa, you know, since the museum started in about 1950, it's always focused on contemporary New England art. And since the 80s, they've been doing a summer annual show where it would be a showcase survey show of art happening in New England. And then in 2010, we took that annual show and we converted it to biennial. And it's amazing what happens when you take an annual show and call it a biennial, because in the art world, the biennial has a lot of different meanings to it and heavier connotations.
So Venice comes to mind for me.
Yes, Lincoln, Venice, exactly. That's what we like to compare ourselves with, Venice. But, you know, the idea for this is to really give, you know, fill the museum, make it as dynamic as possible, and really give people a snapshot of sort of the complexity of art being made here today.
Well, I imagine that I mean, use the word complexity and volume of contemporary art made today. Mm-hmm. How do you get it down? I mean, what were you looking for? What themes were you looking for in the 23 that you chose?
Well, we weren't seeking any themes in particular. We were really going out there to do our homework, visit as many artists as we could. We did over 100 studio visits, looked at much more work through galleries and museum shows, but to really get a pulse of one, you know, the variety of work being made in the area. And we could have curated four biennials. We ultimately selected a group of people that had sub-themes, we have said, that sort of have been woven together that certainly reflect on a particular moment in time, some skepticism and anxiety. But, you know, that is not by no means the effort we set out to, you know, achieve.
Well, you know, listeners, we're going to talk a little bit more specifically about some of the artists that are featured at the De Cordova. And as we do, if you want, you should go to radioboston.org because we have a slideshow of some of the work. It's all sorts of media, not just painting or sculpture, but there's some performance art, there's some video and obviously audio art that we heard. So definitely follow along on the website at the at radioboston.org with our slideshow. But before we talk about some specifics, Sebastian, jump in here anytime because I'd love to hear what you think about, A, the idea of featuring New England artists in a biennial, and B, you know, sort of your first take on who the De Cordova has decided to include this year.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, the first thing I'd say is that, you know, partly because of its history, partly because of, you know, the ambition of curators like Dina and Abigail, the De Cordova is definitely, you know, the premier survey of art by New England contemporary artists, and it's definitely worth seeing. The last one, which was really the first time it was a biennial, really was fantastic. I loved it. I thought it was just terrific. I've got some, perhaps because of it set such a, you know, high standard, I've got some reservations about this one. But the beauty, the
beauty, contemporary artist never without controversy.
Well, that's right. It is, and that's part of the fun of it. You know, I mean, and you know, one of the great things about any biennial, of course, is that there's always some good things. I mean, it's a really mixed up space, and also a mixed up bunch of artists. And there are definitely things that I liked. And you know, the De Cordova is just one of the most beautiful museums to visit in the whole area. It's fantastic.
In Lincoln, of course. And listeners, before I forget, we definitely want to hear from you too. I mean, what do you make of the fact that the De Cordova is featuring a biennial of New England artists? And, you know, if you've looked at our website or you know who they've picked, what do you make of the artists that they've picked? And how would you judge the health of the contemporary art scene in New England today? Is it getting the kind of support that it needs? Is it getting too much support? Are artists themselves getting enough support? Or maybe are they struggling for whatever reason you might think of? We'd love to hear what you think about contemporary art in New England. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. So Dina Deitch and Abigail Ross Goodman, talk to me about some of the specific artists featured in the biennial.
Sure. I mean, out of 23, it's always hard to pick some, but...
Well, let me pick one for you, because
Go for it.
I was going to leave the door open to you, but I'm just going to seize it here. I loved Anna von Merton's quilts. Tell us a little bit about Anna von Merton and why you included her.
Let me take this one. Anna's a fantastic artist. She lives in New Hampshire, Peterborough. She'd been out in California, but she created these cinematic scale, two bodies of work. One is a cinematic scale quilts that have been hand-stitched, hand-dyed, an incredible exploration of one of the things that Dina and I've seen a lot of, which is this third-wave craft, or this combination of craft with contemporary conceptual art. So she stitched these quilts to reflect time on particular dates in history. So one of them reflects the date that Jupiter saw the... Galileo saw the moons revolving around Jupiter, and another the called Star in the East, that reflects the day that the Magi saw the star that sort of helped direct them to Bethlehem, as I understand the story. And then another smaller body of work that we showed in a grid of nine, which was called You and Me, which are, again, these hand-stitched quilts that show energy, depicting time and energy through the hand.
It's amazing. I mean, I personally...
They're very beautiful.
Yeah, love astronomy. Poetic. And the first time that I saw it, I haven't seen them in person, but when I saw the image of it, it took me a long time to convince myself that what looks like a time-lapse image of star rotation at night was actually hand-stitched.
Yeah.
I mean, what does it tell you about the kind of experimenting, Sebastian, that's going on here in contemporary art?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the great things about contemporary art today is just the range of stuff. You know, you can have really conceptual stuff, and then you can have beautifully made things like that. There's another painting in the show that I love by Cullen Bryant Washington Jr. And it's this big sort of black painting. It just looks like sort of black paint that's just been sort of thrown on the canvas, and it looks like a big black, almost monochrome, but there's this white stripe going across it. And so immediately you sense that you're looking down at a road. And there's sort of a deadening effect of that. You know, it's not much fun to look straight down at a road. But then you get these little bits of sort of glitter in the paint, mm-hmm. and then you sort of realize that, gosh, maybe it could be a far-off galaxy. I know that sounds strange, but you really do get these two connotations. And in the left corner, in the bottom left corner, there's a little sort of spacecraft that's been collaged on. And so you get the sense that maybe it's this little boy who's looking down at this road, but actually imagining. And so you get these two things happening, sort of this sort of dead hard space immediately beneath you, and then opening up into this sort of galaxy, this dreamscape. And it's really beautiful.
Mm. Dina, what about sculpture? I mean, the De Cordova is a sculpture park as well.
It is. And, you know, there are definitely great nods to sculpture I'll talk about. But the idea of the biennial is really to explore all media. So we do have a lot of painting and photography mm-hmm. in the show, which we're excited about. But in terms of sculpture, there are two artists, or actually three I'd want to point out. Is one of them is Chris Taylor, who is actually a glass maker. He's a professor in the glass department at RISD, which is something actually that Abby, both of us felt that was something of a New England treasure unto mm-hmm. itself, that mm-hmm. the glass department at RISD is in a unique, you know, institution to itself, where they're the only department mm-hmm. probably in the world where they teach conceptual glass making. And so as a glass artist, he's incredibly skilled, and he could create anything, but he's also explores the nature of what glass can do. So he has a couple of installations. One of them, and they're both on industrial shelves, so they're both presented very non, quote unquote, arty. You know, it was hard to actually figure out where to put his work, because he actually didn't want it in the gallery. He was like, can you just put it in your cafe or on the floor? And we're like, Chris, it's glass, it's going to break and it's going to hurt somebody, so we can't do that. But I mean, what he makes, and if you could probably see them on the website or on our website, he does these perfect recreations of styrofoam cups.
And I have to say, they really are perfect.
They really are.
I mean, you should go to the De Cordova to look at these, but if you can't, check it out on radioboston.org, because, again, you stare at them for minutes and minutes and minutes, and you think, I'm looking at a styrofoam, or a partially crushed styrofoam cup, yeah. even.
Or a little aspirin pill. I mean, he goes through, he does bubble wrap, he does aspirin pills.
And then, it's all glass.
All glass. And then he even recreates scientific beakers as well, and sends back the originals. He actually bought originals from himself that were flawed, and then he recreated them perfectly with the flaw and sent it back to the original makers, and they were none the wiser. So he really asks you to, like, think what is real and what is craft, but he's using his incredible skill as a glass artist mm-hmm. To really bring in, like, broader conceptual questions of reality or image making.
Well, let's take a quick call here. Matthew is calling from Medford. You're on the air, Matthew.
Hi. I just want to say we've been to the De Cordova many times with our son. He's now 6 years old, and we've been there when he was little and now when he's a little older. And it's just wonderful to go there, and we really enjoy sharing the kind of art that's there with our son. I also have a kind of a funny story, if you're interested, about the art there.
Yeah, I'm always interested in great stories.
Yeah, it was wonderful. It was just to show the niceness between De Cordova and the artists. And we went there, and there was a chalk display that was there. And because we had a child, we were a little worried about getting anywhere close to it. And they actually told us that the night before, the cleaning folks actually accidentally vacuumed up the art display because it was not nondescript. They actually had to call the artist back in to do the display once again. And we found that fascinating.
Matthew, there are lots of nods of remembrance around the studio here. So let's get some a little more detail from our guests. Thank you so much for your call. What's Matthew talking about in particular?
That is a good story, Matthew. Thanks for bringing that up. No, that was from actually the 2010 biennial. A fantastic artist, Wellesley-based artist, August Ventimiglia, who actually Abby used to represent and show at her gallery. August is a very thoughtful artist who makes his work out of chalk. He does a lot of work on paper on chalk, but he did this really beautiful sculpture on a 3-foot-high pedestal. It was a very elegant pile of blue chalk that he very carefully crafted, that for some reason our cleaning staff you know, despite the little stanchions and the signs, they thought that pile of blue chalk was dust, and they cleaned it up the day before we opened. So that was pretty entertaining. But the artist had a great sense of humor. He came back, he understood, he cleaned it all up, and he remade the piece. So
well, fortunately for everyone who was about to see it.
Yeah.
Abigail Ross Goodman, let's take a step back here. I mean, I wish we could talk about all the individual artists featured, but we don't have time and we want people to go. But I want to take a step back here and talk about contemporary artists in New England and sort of the situation that they find themselves in. I mean, you used to be the head of the Judy Rotenberg Gallery, one of the most successful galleries in Boston. I mean, what do you think, how do you think the scene is in terms of supporting contemporary artists who've chosen to stay here in New England?
Thanks, Magna. I mean, I think we have a tremendous community of artists. There's always sort of a bit of a second city thing where we compare ourselves to other places, but I would say that, you know, we're in a university town where there are great schools, many of which employ and utilize the talent that's here from an academic perspective. We have incredible curators and great writers that are building the community, but it's all an ecosystem. You can't separate the artists from the museums, from the galleries, from the publications. It all works together, and I think we're at an exciting moment that hopefully will continue to give more and more support to the quality of artists who are here, which is incredibly high.
Sebastian, I know you've written about this recently, that there's been this upsurge of support for contemporary artists in New England. Obviously, the ICA really was not necessarily the thing that kicked it off, but the most prominent in terms of major institutions. But the MFA has followed up. We were just talking about the Isabella Stewart Gardner not that long ago. The De Cordova now has a regular biennial. Are the institutions playing a role here?
Absolutely. And you know, when I arrived from Australia 3 years ago, or almost four, you know, the ICA had just launched in its new waterfront home. And I think the question on everyone's lips was, is this place going to sort of generate a sort of great new interest in contemporary art in this area that had been known for sort of being a bit conservative and a bit traditional? And I think, you know, 3 years later, we can say, yes, it's had an amazing effect. And it isn't, I'm not saying it's all the ICA, by no means. The Cordova, Mass MoCA out in the Berkshires, all the college museums, and now the MFA, which has launched its new contemporary art wing, have all played a really big role. And I just think it's one of the most exciting parts of America to be in for contemporary art now.
Dina, I mean, does the De Cordova sort of have the ICA in its sights?
Good question.
You should talk to our directors. No. We have you know, it's very complementary. We have very different locales, I think, is very important. You know, being in the city versus being in the suburbs. So we actually have quite a different audience in a lot of ways. And we have our sculpture park, which is a really unique feature that we're really working on sort of expanding and exploiting to the best degree to really make that the unique property of the museum. So I think, you know, we find, and actually, you know, a lot of the show, you know, what the ICA, the stronger the ICA gets, I think, only serves us better, because the more comfortable people are with contemporary art through the MFA or the ICA or now the Gardner, only brings more people to us. I think we find that we get a younger audience. You find a lot of people I talk to, they tell me, oh, the De Cordova was the first museum I went to as a kid, and it was my first experience of contemporary art. And so we really have that opportunity to sort of play in and sort of add to that conversation.
But, I mean, just to sort of be a reality check here, it's, you know, it's obviously not as easy as it maybe it should or could be for artists here in New England. We actually have a little bit of tape from Joe Zane, who's one of the artists featured in the biennial. And here's what he has to say on why it's so hard for New England artists.
But I think it's particularly hard for Boston artists, because New England, especially, but particularly Boston, is like the nexus of art education for the Northeast. So many artists get educated here and then immediately leave and go to New York. I think it's something that a lot of Boston artists constantly think about, too, is why am I here? I can just drive 4 hours away. Or, you know, how come those curators only 4 hours away aren't looking at my work? I'm right here.
So what's the answer to that?
I mean, there's truth in it, you know, there's, first of all, it's true for Joe, which makes it, that's enough in essence. And I'm sure there are lots of people, I know there are lots of people who feel that way. And I think there are other people who feel like they've been able to build very successful careers using Boston as their base. But, you know, contemporary artists in general face a larger problem in the globalization of the art market and needing to find ways to get their work in front of increasingly more audiences, curatorial audiences, critical audiences. that I think it, you know, that's one example and a very, I think, personal and honest one, but one in many challenges that face contemporary artists today.
Sebastian, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it's interesting, just in the space of 5 or 6 decades, the number of artists, partly because of the you know, huge number of art schools, has exploded. But so is the number of galleries. I mean, you know, a critic used to be able to sort of spend one day going around the galleries of New York and they could see everything in that time. This is the time of, you know, de Kooning and Pollock and whatever. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, you could spend a whole week going around the galleries of New York and not see them all. So, you know, it's true that every sort of, well, many artists of ambition would want to show in New York if they could get a gallery there, or Berlin or London. And Abigail's absolutely right. The art world has become so much more international. But, you know, I don't see why this needs to be a problem for Boston. I mean, we have, you know, so many great institutions showing contemporary art, and we are a much more sort of mobile culture now, and people can move around. And mm-hmm. I don't think we need to be scared of that. I think that would be very sort of pointlessly, you know, negative attitude to have.
Dina Deitch, what do you have to say to that? Because I know you've got some very clear thoughts. You shared with our producer, Jessica Alper, earlier, like, you know, Boston has a lot of things, but what does it not have in terms of further nurturing contemporary art here?
Well, I mean, I would first qualify Joe's comments to Joe's entire career. This is why we love him so much, is that all of his work is about the anxiety about being an artist, mm-hmm. and his contribution to the biennial is a singular text piece that says, this is not the biennial I was hoping for. So that really encapsulates Joe's point of view, but he does bring a really good point of the second city nature here. And I mean, I think one thing that, you know, Boston, especially New England broadly, is a very, we're a very academic community, I would say. And so it's a lot of universities, and universities create little universes, and it employs a lot of artists, as Abby had mentioned. On the other hand, there's also, it's a very segregating effect as well. And, you know, as Abby also said, that there's also an ecosystem of, for survival for an artist, of, you know, having large spaces and having galleries and collectors. And I think, you know, real estate is something that people forget to factor in Boston.
The
it's
rent
expensive.
Is too darn high.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, artists often do well with big, cheap spaces, and it's hard to find that space here. I think people do pretty well. They find places on the periphery. But I do hear complaints from artists that, you know, they will find a studio space, but then kind of creating that community amongst the artists and kind of keeping the young artists becomes difficult. But, I mean, I think you also have to qualify that and look at other cities throughout the country.
In the last couple minutes that we have, I want to talk to you about a little, all three of you, about not just sort of the role that Boston's or New England's institutions are playing in supporting contemporary art, but how art lovers here are responding to that. Because I'm going to quote you, Sebastian, from a piece that you wrote just September of last year. And you said, museums and the media are mistaken, I believe, if they think that the public is somehow frightened of recent art. They are not. They simply dislike bad contemporary art, and they hate it when the bad stuff is presented as brilliant and swaddled in patronizing art speak. So my quick question to you, Sebastian, is, I mean, is there a risk of that with this rush to for every museum to sort of somehow feature contemporary art?
I don't think so. I think contemporary art, you know, has a role in museums, including in museums like the Museum of Fine Arts, which is a universal museum. It tries to cover art from every culture. But, it should be an active part of these museums. I think that we've all had experiences of sort of reading contemporary art speak and thinking, well, this is rubbish. But, you know, it's great, in my opinion, that contemporary art is an area of contention, that people mm-hmm. do get to argue about it. Of course, not everything that's made is going to be great, but that's part of the fun. If you go to a Degas show, you know Degas was a great artist. That's fine.
But he's had centuries to prove it.
Exactly.
Or at least a century. Yeah,
indeed. So this, to me, is the fun of things like the De Kooning Biennial. You get to argue about it, and you get to respond to the work of living artists who are of our time.
Yeah. Well, we've just got a minute left, but I want to close with a question for you two. Do you think that it's sort of a, if you build it, they will come, that by showing support for contemporary artists, that you're going to grow the actual art lovers who come to see things like the Biennial?
I mean, I do. After 10 years of being, almost 10 years of having a gallery and now having this opportunity at the De Kooning, I think it's so important to create vital spaces for that dialogue that Sebastian's discussing around contemporary art, and to create a new generation of people who are out there looking and enjoying and engaging and hopefully, you know, supporting, and either by their audienceship or patronage on some level. Excuse me.
Well, that's Abigail Ross Goodman, guest curator of the biennial at the De Cordova Sculpture Park and Museum. She's also former owner of the Judy Rotenberg Gallery on Newbury Street. Thank you so much for coming in today. And Dina Deitch, curator of contemporary art at the De Cordova, thank you as well, and great show.
Thank you.
And Sebastian Smee, the Boston Globe's art critic, always great to talk to you.
Thanks, Megan.
And by the way, you can see a slideshow of the works from the biennial at our website, radioboston.org. You might even want to go. It's on now. And we'll go out with more of artist Ven Voisy's Ghost Radio.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.
I know her body was there.
So in other words, I can now process the idea that some kind of energetic force continues to move after the physical body dies. Whether it remains in the same kind of mind or not, I don't know.
Of course, they never told me you don't have to talk like that. That's crazy. That kind of like shuts you down when you get it.
Sure.
But energy continues to exist, and I think that physics supports that as well.